Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
There's so much that I can tell you. You know, most parents I know that's been in this situation that I'm in, they keep the word out there and they keep them alive and they don't want to be forgotten. But not only have I done all that, along with having my autistic son and everything else that goes on in our life, I've also been part of the investigation the whole time. I've nonstop. Since that time, I've been 100% in the investigation as much as I can be. We have found out so much information, you know, like any parent would. I'm just not going to stop, and I'm going to keep pushing, and I want to help other people at the same time. It eases my pain knowing I can help somebody else. As much as I'm going through, and people tell me all the time that I'm the strongest person they know, but I don't always feel that way. In this case here, I know my son was murdered, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt.
22-year-old Cole Thomas, a Florida native, had been working construction jobs around the country with a friend from home and was on a project in Minnesota. He was on a break from intense pre-med studies at his university and wanted to make some money. On the week of Thanksgiving in 2016, Cole and some of his coworkers that he had met on the Minnesota project headed down to North Carolina, presumably to have Thanksgiving dinner with the family of one of his coworkers. However, that never happened, and Cole has not been seen since November 25th, 2016. This story is filled with mysteries, twists, shady characters, and so many unanswered questions. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 228 of The Vanished, Cole Thomas's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Cole was named Christopher Cole Thomas after his father, but went by his middle name Cole. He grew up in Live Oak, Florida, where his family lives on a large property shared with extended relatives. His parents, Chris and Kathy, were thrilled when Cole was born, and later had another son, Zachary. We talked to Cole's dad, Chris, for this story, and he shared with us the joy he felt being a new parent when Cole was born, and how proud he was of the man Cole became as he grew up.
As his father, the only time I ever had to get on to that kid was picking up after herself. But other than that, he was the greatest kid I could ever ask for, any parent, I believe, besides just picking up after herself. I mean, he was just super smart that time he was able to talk. When he was young, he never really hung around younger kids. He was always around us adults and done good in school, always cared about doing good in school. He had his AA before he ever graduated high school. He was salutatorian of his class. He got scholarships, offers from so many colleges and academic scholarships, and he winded up going to the University of Florida here in Gainesville, Florida. He was funny. He always liked to play around. Had a big heart, just a great kid.
We also spoke with Cole's mom, Kathy, and she told us about what she remembers of Cole's childhood and shared many fond memories of her son.
I'll just tell you this. He was the first grandbaby on both sides. He was the first boy in our family because I only have sisters, and everybody was just in love with him when we brought him home and just stayed that way. I mean, he was the apple of everybody's eye, including mine and his dad's. He had grandparents that just doted on him. I don't know. He just brought so much joy into our lives. Cole was always a smart child from the very beginning. I mean, when he first started talking, he could use complete sentences, and it was like talking to a small adult. And just funny. He'd come off the wall with some stuff. He would just be so funny and just give in and caring about other people and how they felt about things. And he liked tractors when he was real little. He played with tractors and liked to take things apart and put them back together. He was just, I can't explain it to you how smart he was.
Since Cole grew up surrounded by extended and immediate family, he was able to enjoy close relationships with many family members. We were fortunate enough to talk to his grandmother, Gwen, who shared what she remembers of her grandson.
Super smart. You know, he was salutatorian of his class, did the best speech at his class graduation, got applauded during that. He had someone call him on his cell phone while he was giving his speech. He reached under his gown and said, "Excuse me a moment." He answered the phone and said, "Okay, I will." And then he said goodbye. He went back to his speech and said, "That was opportunity calling." Okay, and everybody just loved it. His speech was a hit. When I was going through cancer and chemo, very attentive. During college, I mean, I would go over for my doctor's visits. I'd go by his apartment. I'd help him, you know, he'd do his laundry. I'd do his dishes, help him clean up. You know, and help him do some little cleaning, and he'd vacuum. You know, he was just a good all-around guy. If you were his friend, you were his friend for life, and he would just do anything for you. He took good care of me. I'll tell you what I did. When he was going on this job, I gave him $500 to go so he would have extra money in his pocket to go work in Minnesota. And the weekend before Thanksgiving, he sent my money back to me, my $500 back to me. And his dad, he sent his daddy his money back that he had given him. So we got our money back before he went missing. He was not a person that would, if he told you something he was going to do, he's going to do it. And he did. Just so sweet. And everybody loves Cole. We miss his hugs, his jokes, even my customers in my shop. And I do U-Haul rental. When customers needed someone to move them, he would go and move them, get another guy and go move them. They fell in love with him. I mean, he did such a good job. My church, we have a food pantry at our church, St. Luke's Episcopal. And the parsonage, we had a refrigerator. They were getting a new refrigerator. Cole went and moved that refrigerator over to the food pantry in the parish hall. I mean, he would just do so many things for people in our church, move furniture for them. I mean, everybody loved Cole, but Cole was special. He was my first grandchild, first grandson. I mean, during the whole time I was sick, he was so attentive, and there's just no words to describe how close our family is. When I was laying here after chemo, I was so sick, and I was just praying to God to please let me live to see Cole graduate. You know, I have other grandchildren too, but his graduation was coming up, and I was so severely sick, and I just prayed to God every day to please let me see Cole, live long enough to see Cole graduate.
Cole excelled in school, and after high school, he enrolled in college, hoping to find a career in healthcare where he could help other people. Cole had a very personal reason for wanting to go into the medical field, and his dad, Chris, shared what that reason was.
He has one brother. He's now 16 years old. He's autistic. He's nonverbal. He got diagnosed when he was like 3. He actually started talking and when he was a year and a half old and saying, you know, mama and daddy. Then all of a sudden it went away, and that's a long story, but we finally had him diagnosed with autism. I can't carry on a conversation with him. Like, I can't say, Zach, how was your day at school? But he just all the time, daily, he calls out his brother's name. He just says, Cole. And then sometimes he'll just get so upset. And I know he knows, but, you know, I can't talk to him about it. And he's kind of been, you know, kind of aggressive since all this has happened. He can't speak. I mean, he can say one syllable words, but you won't be able to carry on a conversation with him. And, you know, if he's sick or he's hurting or whatever, we have to just figure it out. With Cole being gone, and I know he understands that he's gone, and he always calls his name out, and it just breaks my heart.
Cole's mom, Kathy, had doted on both of her boys since they were born, but told us that Cole and Zachary had a special bond, and how much Cole loved being a big brother.
Oh, from the very beginning, when I told him he was going to be a big brother, he was so proud. And this is one of my favorite things about Cole. There's 9 years difference between them. And he went to every doctor's appointment with me. He was so interested in to being the big brother and to having a baby and the sonogram. And when he found out it was going to be a boy, he was just ecstatic. He wanted to have a brother so bad. He did not want a little sister. Later on, when Zachary was diagnosed with autism, I had to take him like an hour away to therapy for occupational therapy and speech therapy. And Cole would go with me to all the therapies. And then later on, he got his learner's permit. He would drive me to practice his driving and plus to go be supportive of me and his brother. He just adores Zachary. He just took so much time with him. He'd play with him. And to play with Zachary is hard. It was more like wrestling. They would wrestle around and play. He'd make Zachary laugh. And that was so rare. And it was just so wonderful to watch.
Chris also told us how well Cole was doing in college and how proud he was to watch his son turn his passion for caring for Zachary into a profession.
He started immediately that summer in University of Florida. And he went to college, got a dorm, enrolled in his classes. And then, you know, that following semester, he just stayed over there at the college and he wound up getting an apartment over there. He almost had his 4-year degree. When he first started, he wanted to go into medicine. And then he kind of changed a little bit and maybe nurse practitioner. And then, you know, of course, I was trying to get him to figure out what he's always, I mean, just a whiz. He was a genius. He never had to study in school. It just come to him and he always cared about it.
Cole's mom, Kathy, also talked with us about Cole's college experience.
He did good. In the beginning, he was stayed on track. He kept the same mindset that he had before, that he was focused on school. It wasn't until a couple of years later that he just kind of, I don't know, like it's almost like he burned out and he was tired of school and he didn't keep the same focus. I don't know if it was working, having to work 2 jobs and trying to go to school. And he was hanging around older people that I think were making more money than he was. And I think he was impressed by that. And he wanted to do that. He was determined. Like when he decided to drop out of school, he was like, I want to go to work. I want to learn a trade. And, you know, we were disappointed, but still trying to be supportive at the same time. It's very hard to balance that as a parent. I wanted him to make good choices. I wanted him to finish school. And he just was determined to go to work. And I was like, well, there's nothing wrong with working. That's not what I wanted for him. But apparently, you know, he was hard-headed. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. And I just tried to be supportive of his decisions that he made because I always wanted him to make his own decisions. When he was younger, he would always ask me, what do you think about this? And I'd say, Cole, you're going to have to make your own decisions. And, you know, we had this relationship where I'll never lie to you and you don't lie to me. And we'd just be honest with each other. But he always cared what other people thought. And he'd always ask me my opinion. What do you think? What do you think about that? Or think about this? And I'd say, eventually you're going to have to make these decisions on your own and, you know, just deal with the consequences. That big decision he made, he really didn't ask me what I thought. He just was determined to go to work. And I think his grades started to drop, and I think that was more pressure on him than we would have put on him. I wouldn't have minded, you know, his grade dropping because I know how much work he was putting into because he was working a security at one of the clubs at night, and then at the same time he was working at a nutrition store in the mall. And I think he just had too much on his plate. The whole thing with being impressed by the money, I think played a big factor in him deciding to drop out. He did say he would go back. I wanted better for him than having to work paycheck to paycheck. But then also said, well, maybe he needs a taste of the real world to see that school is where he needs to go back to.
As Cole neared graduation, he felt like he should go out and make some money before finishing school. He wanted to be independent and not feel like he was burdening his parents with his college expenses. But his dad Chris told us that he did not want Cole to drop out of college, even if it was just for a short period of time.
Everything was pretty much paid for. He had the scholarship and, you know, other little scholarships along the way. We didn't want him to stop at that time. And, you know, I expressed it to him, Cole, you almost got your 4-year degree, hang in there. And he said, it won't be nothing, I'll pick it right back up. He told me, he said, Dad, I just need to go to work and make some extra money. He went to work, like, doing electrical work with a guy that he knew. And from there, he was working with that guy at the time he went missing. I think he wanted a break because, you know, since he was in ninth grade, I believe, he started doing roll in college at North Florida Community College. To me, he was just burnt out at that time. Plus, you know, when you go to a college town and, you know, kids are partying and kids are whatever. And when he lived here in Live Oak at home, I didn't put up with that. You know, I didn't put up with getting out and, you know, if I told him to be home at a certain time, that's what time I expected him to be home. You know, I had my hand on him so much when he was here that when he was in school, he was pretty much a nerd. I've always enjoyed exercising and working out and stuff. And I had him, you know, when he was 16, he started going into the gym with me and we hung out a lot. And I don't know, you know, started getting girlfriends and, you know, he started wanting to do different stuff. Besides, even though he still cared about his schoolwork, he still wanted to, you know, have some fun too, and I understand that.
We were all college-aged once, and know that young people don't always share everything with their parents, so we wanted to speak to one of Cole's friends about his time in school. We spoke to Josh, a lifelong friend of Cole and the Thomas family.
We kind of didn't talk as much after we went to like community college and all that. And, you know, he got to going to Gainesville and I went down there and saw him one time. He told me he was going to start the party promote, you know, job and stuff like that. Just pretty much partying all the time. I said, man, you know, I'd be careful with it. He'd come over to my house one time after that. I didn't really talk to him a whole lot after that. I started working and all. We just go out drinking and all, have a good time. It was more social than anything. I mean, me and him were alike with that. We would talk to anybody. I mean, we just always meet new people, always just talking. We was always having a good time. We used to work for his aunt, fencing, cutting up trees and all that. Always playing music, always just, you know, singing, goofing off and stuff. I mean, he was on the road stuff and I was here and just working different jobs and all, so we really didn't talk a whole lot once he got into construction. I wrecked a four-wheeler there in 2016 in September, and it was pretty bad off, and I was recovering then, and especially about Thanksgiving time. I don't know. I just heard he was missing, and I was worried. Text Chris, you know, just to, you know, let me know if y'all need anything, and He had texted me when he heard that I was in the wreck. And I think that was the last time I actually spoke to him, was he was just checking on me. I was in the hospital, or kind of where he left it. Let me know if you need anything. Just thinking about you kind of deal.
Cole picked up work with a local guy named Stephen Worley, and they worked on projects all over the country. Cole's mom, Kathy, told us about his time working construction jobs.
Started working construction jobs with a friend of his, and they would put up, like, redo Pizza Hut. They had a contract, and they were redoing Pizza Hut. And it wasn't long after that job he got on with the other guy that he went to Minnesota with, Stephen Worley, and that's when he went up to Minnesota. He traveled around a lot. We didn't see him for a little bit. You know, he'd travel all over Florida, and then I'd say, when are you coming home? And he'd say, next break I get, and I don't know, I'm still working this job. And he worked hard. He put a lot of effort into it. He was trying to learn as much as he could, and he didn't know a whole lot about what he was doing. So he did want to try to get on with Duke, where his dad works. It's a power company here in Florida. He did come home, and he did work at Duke Energy here in Suwanee County as a temporary laborer, but it didn't last very long. They abolished the job, and he lost the job. He was on that job before he started working with Stephen Worley. Then that's when they went to Minnesota.
Over the weekend, near the end of October 2016, Cole called home and asked if he could come home for a few days before leaving on the next job with Stephen. They had plans to go to Minnesota. Chris told us more.
He had worked with him on a job and left his truck. My son left his truck in Atlanta at a friend of the guy he was working with, his house. They come back with the guy he was working with. They rode in his vehicle, come back to Gainesville, Florida. My son called my wife and said, hey, can you run over here to Gainesville? I want to come home for a couple of days. We're fixing to go to Minnesota on a job. So he comes home, and, you know, we spend a weekend together. I want to say it was a Sunday evening, and he asked me, would I run him to the interstate, which is 20, 25 minutes from my house, and meet this guy, Stephen, which he was working with, and he's supposed to pick me up, and we're going to Minnesota. So I took him into that gas station that morning. The first time I'd met him, and, you know, he shook my hand and said, Mr. Thomas, I'll keep him safe. So I met the guy. He worked with him, I guess, for 6 months or so. Well, my son would never tell me, but he would tell my wife, and I didn't learn this until later, but the guy, Stephen, he was working with would kind of bully him or use him because he would get the jobs, and Cole was the helper, the apprentice, and Cole would tell my wife that I don't like the way he does me, but I'm just trying to learn this. Then once I learn it, I won't need him anymore. He supposedly worked in the, you know, he's been an electrician. Me personally, I don't know, but, you know, I know guys that know him, and I've talked about it, and, you know, he'd done electrical work. Now, how good he was or whatever, I have no clue, but evidently he was good enough to, he was get jobs. He'd go to different electrical jobs and go to work. So, you know, he knew enough to get jobs and stay busy and stay working. He'd come home, visit with us for a couple of days because he'd been out of town working with this guy at another job. And visit with us. I took him to the interstate to get with this guy. He left with that guy, went to Minnesota, been worked on that job for 3 weeks on this job, then went to North Carolina.
What Chris Thomas had no way of knowing that day was that no matter how many promises this man made to keep Cole safe, he would never see his son alive again. Cole and Stephen made their way to Minnesota, where they were going to be working on a big construction job for the next several months. There were other men working on the job, too, that Cole became acquainted with, Julian Vallez and Jeremy Carpenter. It's unclear if Stephen Worley knew these men prior to arriving in Minnesota, but they would soon become important characters in Cole's disappearance and the twisted stories that spilled out in the aftermath. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Cole had only been in Minnesota for a few weeks when on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, Chris Thomas received a disturbing phone call from Stephen Worley, the man Cole had been working with. This is how he found out that his son was missing, and the story began to unfold. Here's Chris again.
I'm at the parts store uptown Sunday, and I drive home, and my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law, my other sister-in-law, my wife, and everybody's out in the yard, so I know something's wrong. And I pull up, and my wife's on the phone, and I get out, and I say, what's wrong? And they said, North Carolina Police Department's on the phone with Cassie, and Cole's missing. Within 5 seconds, I got on Facebook. I hit the guy up he was working with and sent him a message, said, you call me ASAP. Well, within 2 minutes, he called me. And he said, Mr. Thomas, I've been trying to get a hold of you for 2 days. It was pretty bad, but I said, no, you didn't. He said, yeah, I just didn't know your name. I didn't know how to look at you. I said, look, you're not that stupid. You got Facebook, and on my Facebook's account, it says son under his father, Chris Thomas. And you could have hit me up. I've been trying to get a hold of you for 2 days. I done called the Benson Police Department and told them, and so I asked him what happened or what was the deal, and he told me, I believe they killed Cole. I said, who? He said, well, he drove these guys down to North Carolina. I think they were picking up drugs, and I think Cole freaked out, or they thought he was a cop, or Cole just freaked out, and I think they killed him. And I said, what? And he just kept saying that. So now Sunday, he knows they killed him. On the phone to me, he knows they killed him. I guess Julian, Rudy, whoever the guys were, at that time I didn't know. I didn't even know the guys he left with. I didn't know he left with Julian Valles and Jeremy Carpenter. I didn't know he was in North Carolina. So the guy he was working with that I talked to on the phone, that I sent a message to that called me, said that they killed him. I believe they killed him. You know, I was super upset and mad because he could have called me Friday or Saturday or, you know. So I immediately put everything that I needed in a vehicle and I left right then. Me and my wife went to North Carolina.
Eager to get to North Carolina to find out what happened to their son, Chris and Kathy made the trip from Florida to North Carolina. Unfortunately, being the weekend after Thanksgiving, they hit holiday traffic along the I-95 corridor.
It's about an 8-hour drive, but it took us about 10 hours or 11, 12 hours to get up there. And I found out about 2 o'clock on a Sunday, and he went missing at 3 o'clock Thanksgiving night. So I found out 2.5 days later. And we drove up there. We get to the police department that Monday morning early.
Cole's dad knew that Cole had experimented with party drugs in college, but never seemed to take more than a passing interest in them, and certainly was not a regular user. Still, the story Stephen told gave Chris and Kathy Thomas great concern for the welfare of their son, and they knew they were behind the curve with a 3-day delay. So they wasted no time in getting to North Carolina in order to find out what happened to their son, who had last been seen in an unfamiliar place, with people he had only known for a short period of time. Chris told us what happened after they first arrived, and the police started to track down Julian and Jeremy, Cole's co-workers.
I'm telling them something happened to my son. I'm telling them what the guy told me. I'm telling them, you know, all this stuff. And so the detective that was there started calling. They were both together. You know, they had to go all the way back to Minnesota. So he called one of them, and he was asking them questions. So when they reported him missing, they told him my son just jumped out of the car and took off, took the keys, took off, and had a panic attack. And they never seen him again. That was their story when we first got to the police station. So, you know, of course, I'm angry because nobody contacted me. And, you know, they're telling me you got to wait so many hours to report missing. And to me, you know, if somebody says, hey, he jumped out of a car and had a panic attack, I mean, there's so much that could have been done. I can't go back and change any of that. But so I'm talking to him, and he's calling the guy, one of the guys, the Julian guy, and asking him, hey, Julian's story was they was coming down for Thanksgiving dinner to some of his family. So he went to asking him about, you sure there wasn't no drugs involved? So he was asking Julian Valdez, hey, are you sure you was coming for Thanksgiving dinner? Are you sure, you know, there wasn't something else? And they told so many lies over. So he would hang up with him, then he would call him back. And I asked him about talking to the other guy that was with him. He said, well, they're both in the car together, so there's no sense in me talking to the other guy right now. I'm going to talk to... So he keeps talking to Julian. He keeps calling him back. And then the story just keeps changing just a little bit. But it still was Cole got out by himself.
Chris Thomas is not the type of guy to just leave North Carolina and return home without any answers. He couldn't just sit around waiting to hear news from the Benson Police Department. So Chris began his own search for Cole.
And then from that moment on, I don't leave North Carolina for 2.5-3 months. I wind up pulling my travel trailer up there, and I stay up there, me and my wife. You know, I'm searching for my son every day, day in and day out. Well, in the meantime, you know, they're trying to figure out what went on and try to get some truth out of these guys. And so they eventually say that they went to look for Cole, and that Jeremy found him, and he's like, hey, man, come on, it's cold out here. Come back to the car. And Cole said, I'll be there in a minute. And then he never come back. Then it changed. It was just one lie after another. And they said that Cole took the keys and just took off.
The story about what happened to Cole that night continued to evolve and become more confusing for both Cole's family and the police. So the police started looking for evidence that would verify the stories Jeremy and Julian were telling. Chris shared more with us.
The police department started getting surveillance cameras in the area. Well, they got pictures of my son and Jeremy walking together away from the car. So they arrive in Benson around, you know, 105, 107, and they crossed that camera right after that. The Jeremy Carpenter and my son. Then the police know they lied about my son just getting out of the car. So now these two get out of the car and they walk off. Well, from then I walked off with him trying to calm him down because he was nervous.
So they arrived in Benson, North Carolina in the early morning hours of November 25th. Initially, they said that Cole just freaked out and ran off. But now we know that Cole and Jeremy walked away from the car together. After learning this, things still were not adding up for Chris. So he started calling Jeremy himself, hoping he would tell Chris the truth if the police weren't involved.
I kept calling this guy. He would never answer my call. I kept calling. And finally, one day, my sister-in-law sent him a message, and he said, I'm trying to get up the courage to call Cole's dad back. And she said, well, he just wants to talk. So eventually, I get a hold of him. You know, a long time ago, we done a little episode with Crime Watch Daily, and at that time, this was all I knew, just from his phone conversation. So, you know, and I didn't want to get on to him. I'm just trying to find out what happened. So I'm asking him all these questions. I'm asking him, at that time, I already knew that he got out of the car with my son. So I said, y'all went to whose house y'all go to? Because at the time, they found out that one of them said that they went to a guy named Rudy's house. Well, I didn't know who this Rudy guy was. At one point, Julian said he was his uncle, and then he said he was something else, and it winds up he's just a guy that he knows. So that's where they went to get these drugs at. And I don't know where at this time where the guy lives. I don't know nothing about him, this Rudy guy. So I'm asking, where did y'all go? And he told me. And he didn't know the location. He's never been there. He's not from there. Even though I found out he worked there 6 months earlier, but he worked in that area. But he didn't know where this guy's house was. All he knew is that they were bad people. That's what he kept telling me. And I said, well, y'all, okay, so y'all went to the house. He said, well, we were supposed to go get 1 ounce of dope. Julian had all this set up, and we talked Cole into driving because he said he didn't have no driver's license and Julian's license was suspended. So they talked my son into driving and he drove. They all three come down to Rudy's house. I said, did they mess with Cole while they was there? He said, no, man. Cole just sat on the couch right there. Me and him sat on the couch and Cole really didn't say nothing the whole time. And I said, well, did you get your dope or whatever? He said, well, you know, we got there, and all I know is this ounce of dope showed up, and he said, I kept telling Julian, man, let's go, man, let's go. We got to go back to work, and Cole kept telling him, hey, man, we got to go, man. And he said, man, just hang on, I'm waiting on something. And so we sat around there, and during that time, supposedly the Dallas Cowboy game was on. Well, this Rudy guy and all them, they love the Dallas Cowboy. So supposedly they're sitting there watching this Dallas Cowboy game.
Jeremy continued to talk to Chris and told him that he and Cole felt intimidated in the house, as there were other men there, all carrying guns and speaking in a foreign language they couldn't understand. After 4 or 5 hours at the house, things started to feel tense, and eventually Jeremy, Julian, and Cole took off in the car that they had traveled there in. Cole believed that they were going to grab some food and head back to Minnesota. But as he drove, he realized something was wrong. Chris told us more about what Jeremy said in their conversation.
He said, well, I was trying to calm Cole down, man. We was driving, and when we left Rudy's house, he said, I think somebody's following us from Rudy's house. And I said, well, why do you say that? He said, well, Cole would pull over kind of off the edge of the road, and a half a mile back or a mile back, there'd be a car pull over. They'd see headlights pull over, and then he'd pull back on, and then the headlights would get back on the road again. So they kept going, and he said Cole started going down different roads, which, you know, Cole didn't know this area. He's never been there. And supposedly the reason Julian kept telling them, hang on, man, waiting on something, there was more dope coming. So they got more than just an ounce of dope. So while they're driving, Julian's sitting in the back seat with all this dope sitting in the back seat. He turns around and tells him, hey, man, put that crap up somewhere. We get pulled over, we're going under the jail. And he was like, man, I ain't worried about that. During this time, Cole's driving down different roads trying to get away from whatever car's supposedly following him. And at one point, he tells me, well, I don't know. After a little bit, we didn't know if it was the law or what it was. Well, he said, I reached back there, grabbed the dope, and threw it out the window. And I said, hold up. Let me ask you something. If you threw the dope out the window, why are you still alive and my son's missing? And he said, Miss Thomas, I don't know, Miss Thomas. Miss Thomas, I don't know. And I said, okay. And I kept letting him go on. He said they got to Benson, pulled over in Benson, and Cole, before we stopped, his hand was just, he could tell he was nervous as crap. His hand was shaking on the steering wheel. And he said, man, I don't want no part of this shit. So he gets out of the car. Jeremy said, I get out trying to calm him down. And he said that Julian and him got in a big argument. And I said, what did he say? He said, man, I don't know, man. He was just upset, man. And I said, what did he say to Cole? Well, I don't know. He never would tell me. He just said he was upset when Cole, right before he got out of the car. So Cole and him get out of the car, and he said, I'm trying to calm him down. He said, you know, we're in a neighborhood, and it's whatever, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we wind up at a church. And Cole said he's got to pee, so he goes around the side of the church to pee, and I go to the back of the church and get on my hands and knees and pray. Well, you know, there's more red flags. Cole's going to pee right there in front of anybody. He ain't going to go around all that. And this guy now, this boy from Alabama, is 43 years old. And he tells me he gets on his hands and knees and pray. And I said, hey, you got on your hands and knees and pray for what? And he said, well, these ain't good people, Miss Chris. So, you know, I know something's going on here. And he says that he stayed on his hands and knees for about 10 minutes praying.
As we spoke with Chris over the course of multiple interviews, the story about what happened to Cole just seemed to get more and more bizarre. Why was Jeremy praying at a church in the middle of the night? And what was happening to Cole? What Jeremy told Chris just posed even more questions. Here's Chris again.
He said, right before I get up, I hear a car door shut. And he said, I think it's somebody going to work. I didn't know, you know. In my mind, it's Thanksgiving night. Ain't nobody going to work. And he says, I get up and go around the front of the church, and I start going, hey, Cole. And I'm looking for him, and he ain't nowhere to be found. And that's the last time he's seen him.
Cole's earlier instincts about being followed had indeed been correct. Rudy, TJ, another local man Rudy knew by the nickname Gordo, and some other men had followed Cole, Julian, and Jeremy into Benson after Julian texted Rudy and tipped him off to their location. While at the church, the mysterious Gordo, who was named only in court records, is believed to have forced Cole into the car and driven off with him to a location where allegedly Cole was later murdered. But this isn't where the story ends, and the mystery only continues, as Chris continued to learn the events of the night and the morning from Jeremy.
He said he looked up. And I said, and I asked him, I said, you didn't see him get somebody put him in a car or he get in a car? Or, no, I just heard that car door shut and I didn't see him. You know, I was trying to be quiet because I was in a neighborhood and I was just calling his name, but I didn't never find him. So he said he seen the McDonald arches. So he said, I started walking towards McDonald's because I'm diabetic and I needed some water. I was thirsty. So he said, during my walk, I heard two gunshots. And he said, I hope that ain't what I think it is. He said, I think they killed Cole. I said, who? He said, and them guys, man. I said, what guys? I said, so you're telling me Rudy and TJ and them already made it to town? And he said, yeah, they had already been there. So all that's confusing to me, other than the car following them. At that time, it was confusing. And then he said he makes it to McDonald's and he gets some water. And I know that to be true because they had pictures of him at the drive-thru of McDonald's, and he did not pay anything. She handed him a cup of water. The only thing that was open was the drive-thru at that time of night. So he walked through the drive-thru, got the cup of water, did not use a wallet, did not pay for anything. When he left there, he said, I started walking back towards where the car was, and I got two blocks from Julian, and I seen him, and I was like, man. And I said, what you manning about? What's the problem? He said, man, he was just upset, man. And he said, that's my only way back to Minnesota. I ain't got no other way back. So he said, I kept walking, and I got about a block from him, and he seen me. And he said, where the fuck y'all been? And he said, hey, man, I was just trying to calm him down, man. Well, if my boys would have seen you in this neighborhood, it wouldn't have been good, and there wouldn't have been nothing I could do about it.
Many of the events from Chris's phone call with Jeremy have turned out to not be true, or only partially true. We later learned from Chris that Julian had Cole's phone after he was kidnapped, and that explained why it pinged in places there was no other evidence that Cole had been. Later, the phone made its way back to Minnesota with Jeremy and Julian.
When I first got up there, they said Julian was at the car. He would walk to the stop sign and smoke some cigarettes, then walk back to the car, then walk to the other stop sign. And when I walked out there to let the chief show me where the car was sitting and where Julian walked, and he told me, he said, we walked down to this stop sign where Julian told us, and there were cigarette butts, and it was a cigarette that he said he smoked. And we went to the other stop sign, and there were cigarettes there he said he smoked. So he said, I believe he was walking back and forth. Well, that's exactly what Cole's phone was doing. I know by the detective telling me Julian and Rudy and them left Benson at 3:56 a.m. that morning. Well, from 1:15 till 3:47, Cole's phone was doing exactly what Julian was doing. So Julian had my son's phone in his pocket. His phone was on. It wasn't dead in that car. It was walking back and forth to the stop sign to the car, to the stop sign to the car. And then at 3:47, it started walking over to that gas station where Rudy was parked at. And from that point there, the phone got in the car, got out on the highway 55 and drove towards Mount Olive or towards Goldsboro. They shut my son's phone off at 4:09. And it went dead from then on. So on their way, they were almost to Newton Grove, which is the town in between Benson and Mount Olive. So right before they get to Newton Grove, they shut his phone off. Or it went dead or whatever. Well, at 9:30 that morning, they turned my son's phone back on. And it's at Rudy's property. And Julian tries to call it. Jeremy tries to call it. Why are they calling my son's phone when they got it in their hand? And I know why, because my son had a passcode on his phone. Julian come back after they went back to Minnesota and the law wanted them to come back and interview. So he come back to interview and gave them my son's phone and said, hey, it was in the car, it was locked in the car, whatever. And I remember the detective asking me, do I know the passcode to Cole's phone because he's got a passcode on it when he get into it? And I said, no, I don't know it. And he said, well, we'll figure it out. So that's what they were doing that morning, was trying to get it. I believe they were calling my son's phone and why it was ringing, and they tried to answer it and tried to get into it. And then later that day, it come on again at Rudy's residence, whether they were trying to get in there to delete anything or see if he had anything that needed to be deleted.
We still don't know exactly what the motive for killing Cole was. But Chris believes that he was killed because Rudy and his friends believed him to be a police officer or an informant. You heard me mention earlier that Cole's parents were aware that he had dabbled in party drugs during college, but they don't believe he was knowingly or willingly involved in any drug deals that took place in North Carolina. Cole's mom, Kathy, explained to us why they don't believe Cole was involved in the drug deals that took place that night.
He had this girlfriend, and I believe that she was using, and I believe that influenced him. He admitted it to me, that he had tried some drugs. Like I said, we had a very open, honest relationship. I think he omitted a lot of things from me at that time. That I would be judgmental, and I probably would have been, you know, I probably would have been all over him about it. But he did say, yeah, I have tried some things, and I don't know, at the time I didn't see it like as a problem or anything like he had a problem with drugs, just that he had experimented with drugs. Chris did sit down and talk with him, you know, told him that's just not the life you want to lead, that's just not what you want to do, you got so much potential and future ahead of you, and, you know, he gave him the parental talk about drugs. It's not like we just let it go and just like, oh, yeah, do what you want to do. It wasn't like that. It was, you know, he did have a serious heart-to-heart with him about it. You know how they say a mother knows when something's wrong? When I talked to him on the phone, I just felt like he kept telling me how good the job was going, how much money he was making. He was proud of the amount of money he was making and saving. He was saving his money. And that's what's so hard for me, like, with the whole drug scenario, because we've seen his bank account. And he wasn't withdrawing large amounts of money. I mean, just normal amounts of money.
Chris agreed about Cole experimenting with drugs and told us that this took place back when he was still going to college, and they found no evidence that Cole was using drugs in the lead-up to his disappearance. They're left to wonder if these other guys just used Cole because he was the only one with a driver's license.
I know he experimented while he was in Gainesville. You know, I went over there and had a long talk with him. He didn't lie to me. That's something he never would lie. He told me he tried it, and, you know, I, of course, gave him my whole spiel.
When we spoke with Cole's grandmother, Gwen, she was able to sum up for us what she's been told happened to her oldest grandson in this strange tale.
Cole was driving, but he didn't bring money. Jeremy Carpenter, Julian Valles, and Cole in the car. Rudy came later, from what I understood, from the information that we have, you know, and our PI has gotten. Rudy DeLeon was the one that actually killed Cole. Two shots. The things that Jeremy had told Chris in the beginning phone calls, he said he'd heard gunshots, and he described it, but they've all lied so much. Our PI has talked and Chris has talked. They all said that they heard gunshots or they knew that Cole was dead because Rudy shot him. There's more than just these four or five guys that's involved that was there. I feel like that Rudy and Anthony James and there's two other people who picked Cole up that night by gunpoint and held him, and I feel like they kidnapped him and took him to Wayne County, and then they all gathered, and that's when they hurt him. That's my opinion, and that's some of the inklings that I know about. That's why I'm saying there are several others that are involved who have been talked to. Their stories vary. They've hidden the facts, and they've lied about the facts, and when they talk to the officials and even to Chris, their stories change. You know, they'll tell one person one thing, and then when they'll say, well, yeah, they'll talk, like with Chris, they will go and talk, set it up to talk to the authorities, and then they tell a whole different story. So they're not credible. I just think Cole got in a situation since he was in North Carolina, and I think between what went down, I think that he was nervous about it. I think he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Cole was clean cut. His supervisor called Chris after Cole went missing. And he told Chris, he said, Cole didn't associate with those guys. I went to dinner with your son on the job. He's funny. He's a good guy. He didn't run with those kinds of guys. He said, I don't understand this. It just did not make sense to me that he even went to North Carolina with them guys. It just did not make sense to me at all. The cell phone went all the way back to Minnesota after those guys went back to try to go to work. Julian Valles, he had Cole's car keys to his truck, and he had Cole's cell phone. Cole would not leave the keys to his truck nor his cell phone. I mean, they lied about those keys, be it that Cole had the keys. Even like they went and got someone to be a key maker, you know, to make them a key. And Julian opens the glove box and there's the key. Does that make sense to you? Then another story was Cole might have threw the keys under the vehicle. Does not make sense to me.
While Chris was trying to get the story from Jeremy over the phone, Jeremy told Chris that he and Cole had run off from the car, but that Julian stayed in the car waiting for them. This is the point in the story where Jeremy claims that Cole had to use the restroom, and they were near a church, so Jeremy stopped to pray, fearing for his own life. He said that he heard what he believed to be Cole being taken and started running. But then, as he reunited with the other men, the story seemed to shift. Jeremy and Julian decided to report Cole missing to the Benson Police Department. which was less than a block away. Despite thinking that he may have been taken against his will, they didn't share that information with the police at the time. Here's Chris again telling us how Cole was reported missing.
Jeremy leaves the car. He don't make it back to the car for about an hour and a half. So he makes it back to the car. Well, the whole time they're gone, he left with Cole. Julian stays at the car. Now, supposedly Cole took the keys and the car's locked up and whatever. They wind up reporting him missing at that time when he gets back and say that he just jumps out of the car, took the keys, had a panic attack, and took off. From what he tells me on the phone is that the law rode around probably 5 minutes and come back and said we didn't see anybody. And he said, we gave them our number and said, if you see him, tell him to call us. Well, at that moment, Rudy has parked his car at a gas station probably 4 or 5 blocks from where Cole parked that car. TJ stays in the car, at the car. Rudy walks over to where they're at, except he stands back a ways. From what I understand, the law, when they reported Cole missing, they seen Rudy standing down there, but I don't believe they ever made contact with him. From what I understand, Julian and them told him that he come to pick them up because Cole took the keys and he didn't have no other ride. So that's the reason he was there is what I understand they told. But I don't believe the law ever made contact with Rudy. So, you know, if it were me, I'd have been, hey, what's this guy doing? Let me go talk to this guy a minute. So the law leaves. They walk off. They start walking with Rudy. Rudy says, where's my dope at? Why'd you throw my dope? He said, man, we didn't know if it was the law or what, man. Well, you coming back with me, and when it gets daylight, you going to find my dope. And so he says he goes back to his house, and he's telling me the whole time, I can't even relax or nothing because I'm just thinking they fixing to kill me. And I said, Cole wasn't in the car with y'all at that moment? No, man, I hadn't seen him past the church. So they get back, and then he tells me, you know, the next morning after it gets daylight, they take Rudy's vehicle and go look for the dope. And he said, Julian's driving. I'm getting out, walking around looking for it. And then I guess they don't find it. And he goes back to Rudy and he gets back to the house. And that's when supposedly Rudy strip searched him. Well, from what Stephen told me on the phone when he called me to tell me my son was missing and all that, he told me then that he thought they killed him and they strip searched him and all that. They strip searched Cole, and that's when I think he freaked out.
According to Gwen, Julian and Jeremy hightailed it back to Minnesota to work, eager to get away from Rudy and his friends. However, things didn't go as planned for them back in Minnesota either.
After they reported Cole missing, after a day or so, they went back to Minnesota to go back to work. And everybody back there kind of knew that Cole was missing by then because the supervisor had called Cole's supervisor, not Julian's supervisor. Julian and Jeremy worked on a different crew, and when they got back, they got drug tested and they failed it. And so did the guy that, like his boss, him and his wife, also failed the test. They were selling drugs on the job. And so they came loaded up and they came back to North Carolina. And I guess Jeremy got a bus ticket and went back to Mobile, from what we heard.
This story is difficult to untangle, but from what Chris has learned, it appears that Rudy wanted his drugs back and that Julian owed him money from past drug deals. We don't fully understand how Cole got roped into this deeply rooted web, but it seems that he's the one who paid the ultimate price. In July 2017, Rudy, Julian, Jeremy, and TJ were arrested on charges related to Cole's death. The charges were eventually dropped as the district attorney wanted to pursue more serious charges for the four. Chris told us about the original charges.
In 2017, the law enforcement got a hold of me and said that they were going to present to a grand jury concealment of a death and obstruction of justice. So Rudy, at the time my son went missing. He had had a big drug charge in Wayne County. I don't know, $80,000 worth of marijuana, something. I can't remember exact. And weapons of mass destruction. And I don't know whether that was just a sawed-off shotgun or whatever it was. But so at the time my son went missing, he had a lawyer because, you know, he still hadn't been to trial for that charge. So when law enforcement went to him to ask him questions, he pretty much said, fuck you, I ain't telling you nothing. Talk to my lawyer. That's pretty much what law enforcement said. He pretty much told them. So when they done these charges on these guys, Rudy didn't get no obstruction of justice charges because he never lied. He never told them anything. But the other three guys, Jeremy, Julian, and TJ, Jeremy got four charges of obstruction of justice. Julian got three charges of obstruction of justice, and TJ got one obstruction charge. Plus, they all four got concealment of a death. They arrested them. Rudy's bond was $1 million. Julian's bond was $750,000. TJ's bond was $350,000, and Jeremy's bond was $500,000. And they stayed in jail for about 9 months. And every month they had a bail hearing or a bond hearing, and, you know, we went to court every month. You know, in the court proceedings, they would tell them that we don't want them leaving and running off, and that's why their bonds are this high. And, you know, we got more interviews coming in, and they said that some of the defendants were being threatened. I know that TJ wanted to, he said he would tell what happened if the state would offer him protection. That's what his lawyer came to the prosecutors and said. Well, they looked into it, and the state don't offer protection. You know, they stuck him in jail, and the problem then become, you know, they had a lawyer and couldn't talk to him as much. And so the detective, Captain Percy, which I like very much, and he's always told me that, well, they all have kind of, that Jeremy, they believe he's seen something so horrific that he's scared to say anything.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. While we were researching this episode, we worked diligently to obtain court records and speak with law enforcement. Because the story of Cole's disappearance is a tangled web filled with shady characters, some of whom are not even identified, we weren't able to get any records, but we were fortunate enough to talk to Captain Percy of the Benson Police Department. He introduced himself to us and told us how his department became aware that Cole was missing.
My name is Greg Percy. I'm captain with the Benson, North Carolina Police Department, and I got into law enforcement in 1995, primarily because I enjoyed working outside and I wanted a challenging job that was different from everything else. Our officers were approached by Julian Velez and Jeremy Carpenter, who reported that Cole Thomas had run off from the vehicle and had not returned. They filed a report that night, actually early that morning, because it was about 3:30 in the morning when they came in contact. But yeah, they completed the report that night. At the time the report was filed, they kind of fanned out from where Velez's vehicle was parked, you know, and they checked all of our local streets. You know, this guy's from Florida. Theoretically, he knows nothing about Benson, you know. So they just kind of started from where the car was and worked their way out from there, hoping to see him walking down the street. You know, at the time this incident was reported, we had no idea that it was what it turned out to be, because that's not what the officers were told. So after they didn't see him walking around anywhere, they checked our local motels, they checked our restaurants, you know, our couple of restaurants that are open all night, you know, gas stations and stuff like that, and not finding him at any of these places, they met back up with Velez and Carpenter and said that they'd keep an eye out for him, you know, and got their phone numbers and stuff, and they'd be in contact with him. I know they called local jails in our county and surrounding counties. They called hospitals. Any avenue that they could think of at 3:30 in the morning, you know, is what they did.
At first, Captain Percy told us that the department didn't think much of Cole's disappearance, because they had been told that he simply got out of the car and walked away. Police thought the missing person report would resolve quickly.
You know, as far as the general missing persons report goes, obviously we try to make contact with the family, you know, locate any relatives, friends that this person may contact, do exactly what they did that night, you know, check our motels, check our restaurants, any obvious places that they could think to look. This particular case, you know, we had no reason to believe that it was anything nefarious had happened. You know, it was a 22-year-old jumped out of the car and walked off. Bear in mind, I wasn't here when all this was happening, so I'm just telling you what I think they were thinking. They fully expected to find him, you know, walking down the road or at the McDonald's getting a cup of coffee or something. They had no idea that it would turn into what it turned into. I know that the night all this happened, neither Velez nor Carpenter, they didn't have any family information for Cole. I mean, they'd known the guy 2 weeks. His phone was in their vehicle, but it was locked and they didn't have the passcode to it. So we couldn't use that. If I remember correctly, I want to say that Velez called Stephen Worley, which is the foreman in Minnesota, and Worley got in contact. I wasn't privileged to any of this stuff. This was all happening, you know, over holiday weekend. So I wasn't even here. I know the officers got in contact with the family.
As Cole's disappearance began to become more complex, other law enforcement agencies stepped in to help, and Captain Percy is confident that the other agencies involved searched every place they could think of in their search for Cole.
We worked really closely with multiple law enforcement agencies on this. Yeah, they've been super helpful. It's safe to say we've searched probably every square inch of Benson itself. We've conducted searches in Harnett County and Wayne County. Anywhere that the investigation led us to a possible location, we've either done with consent or through a search warrant. I would say easily over 60 searches. We've used FBI, cadaver dogs. We've used helicopters, airplanes, people on the ground, ATVs, any way possible. They've been present, like for search warrants in Wayne County. They allowed us to use their annex offices to do interviews and stuff of people in Wayne County. They're assisting us, you know, in any way that they can.
The Benson Police Department has remained the primary investigative agency on Cole's case, and Captain Percy shared with us some of what they've found, and also some of the frustrations they've experienced with the gossip going around that has hindered their search.
There are very few people that know all the intricate details of how this happened and why it happened, and I would be cautious about sharing or spreading rumors through social media because it does nothing to advance the case. There's two separate videos. One video is at a gas station in Mount Olive, which was them when they were leaving Mount Olive to come, well, ostensibly to head back to Minnesota. There's really nothing notable in that. They're you know, they're in the store buying drinks and snacks and getting gas and stuff, but there's nothing outstanding about that. The second video is from a drugstore here in town that happened to have a camera pointing in a northwesterly direction, which captured who we believe to be Cole and Jeremy Carpenter walking through a bank parking lot. No, Julian never left the car. Julian stayed with the vehicle the entire time. Jeremy Carpenter and Cole were the ones that walked away from the vehicle, and Jeremy came back alone. There is a third video of Jeremy at McDonald's.
Finally, Captain Percy shared that he continues to maintain contact with the Thomas family, and he admires Chris for his strength in searching for his son. He also shared with us the contact information in the event that anyone has information about Cole.
You know, and I've talked to Chris and Kathy several times, and I've expressed to them how desperately we want to find him just to give them some closure. But from a law enforcement standpoint, we also would like to see justice done as well. And in all honesty, I think he's been remarkably patient and restrained. It's hard to say what I would do in that situation. Anyone with information regarding the disappearance of Cole Thomas can reach us at the Benson Police Department, 919-894-2091. Or they can send an email to crimeline@bensonpd.org. There's a $5,000 reward by the state of North Carolina, and there's a $10,000 reward that was provided by the family.
In September 2019, the Johnston County District Attorney issued a statement acknowledging that law enforcement and prosecutors believe that Cole was killed. According to a local news article, District Attorney Susan Doyle said in a statement that the investigation into the death of Cole Thomas is ongoing. The North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation continues to follow up on all new information. She went on to state that she was dismissing the criminal charges against Jeremy, TJ, Rudy, and Julian in order to avoid compromising a future prosecution. Chris says that he and his family were made aware that this was going to happen, but they were disappointed, to say the least.
So we had a big meeting here back in July, and that's when the DA told me that they were going to drop the charges, which I did not agree with. They was going to drop the concealment charges, and they explained to me from way back, before they ever got out of jail, that they were going to probably drop the concealment charges because they believe it would hurt later on pressing charges for murder. And I understood that. But the obstruction charges, I never understood that. And they never mentioned that to me in the beginning until this last meeting we had. So the obstruction charges they have are black and white. I don't care if they plead no guilt, not guilty or whatever. They're going to get charged with it. There's no getting out of it. So I don't understand that, other than from what in the best interest of the case is to drop that.
As the investigation into Cole's death continues, his friends and family are left behind to put together the pieces of what happened while they continue to wait for justice. Cole's old friend Josh says that he doesn't know much about Cole's disappearance firsthand, but he hurts for Chris and Kathy and plans to start visiting with them more, hoping that he can bring comfort to them as they remember Cole.
Well, I try to take everything lightly because you don't get the whole story unless you go from the source. So, I mean, I heard bits and pieces of this and that. And I didn't know what to believe and all. And I finally sat down with Chris and all that, which it took me a long time to go over there. About a year after he went missing, we had a candlelight service kind of deal for him uptown. And I went up there and I seen his grandma, Miss Gwen. I was always at the house, you know, all the time. I saw her and she gave her a hug and all, she's just bawling, crying. That hurt me. I kind of took it as I brought her pain because I saw her. She said, "I'm sorry, you know, you were always at the house and all." And I didn't want her crying like that every time I went around. So it kind of took me a while to go back. I've seen her since then and all and talked with her. And I went with Chris and got the whole story from him. I'm planning on going over there more. I mean, somebody knows something. I just wish that they would let it out. I thought maybe they had put it on him as a way to make some money, you know, and he kind of went with them with that. But you know, I never thought he was like a druggie or anything. I know Chris and him been fighting a hard fight. You know, I've worked out with Chris for years, and that's one dude I wouldn't want to piss off, especially on this level. Man, I hate it for them. They're absolutely golden. Like I said, they're family. I mean, I love them to death. They do anything for you. It's not like everything would be all right, but it would be nice to, you know, see some justice and them get their closure.
The last time we spoke with Chris, he indicated that the investigation continues today, and he hopes someone will come forward and finally tell the truth about what happened to Cole and why. As the Thomas family waits for answers, Kathy and Chris grapple with how to explain to their other son, Zachary, that Cole isn't coming back in a way that he can understand. Here's Kathy.
The bond they had, I know Zachary still feels it today because he still calls for it. I mean, he doesn't have many words. I mean, but he can definitely say Cole, and he does almost every day ask for his brother. He'll go in his room, and he'll lay on the bed and just holler for him, and it's heartbreaking to watch. And I'll say, Jack, you miss your brother, don't you? I miss him too. It's hard, but I feel like at the times when he's asking for his brother, I don't know if he feels him or if he's just missing him. It's very hard, and I don't know if he understands that he's not coming back. We've tried to sit down and explain it. Chris has tried to explain it to him, and it's just too hard for me to try to talk about with Zachary because it's too much. But Chris has tried to explain to him that Cole's not coming back and it's okay to miss him. But I don't know how much of it Zachary understands.
So what happened to Cole Thomas in the early morning hours after Thanksgiving of 2016? Why did he agree to drive to North Carolina with these guys that he barely knew? And was he aware that they planned on purchasing drugs? Did he realize that their plan included him driving large amounts of drugs across state lines from North Carolina to Minnesota? And what exactly went wrong that night? We know that Cole thought that they were being followed, and according to Jeremy, they were. Why did those men come after them that night? Was it because they thought Cole was an informant, or possibly a police officer? Or was it because of Julian's drug debts? This is a story that we were only able to start to uncover, with much more mystery and detail left in sealed court documents, and persons of interest who won't cooperate with law enforcement. At the time of his disappearance, Cole Thomas was 22 years old. He was approximately 6'1" tall and weighed around 230 pounds. He had blonde hair and blue eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Cole Thomas, you're asked to call the Benson Police Department at 919-894-2901. You can follow Cole's story on Facebook at Find Cole Thomas.
You just have no closure, and there'll never be closure until we get to bring something home. We feel like that they had moved his body. The search team, oh my God, those people in North Carolina, they banded together. They had a search team every other week, up driving back and forth searching for Cole. There's people now that I'm in touch with who, she has a kayak and she does that, and she rides her bike and she has a dog and they go search. Her and another person, they're still searching up there.
I wake up every morning with that thing in my stomach, knowing that my son is gone. And I'd like to say it gets easier, but it doesn't. It hasn't over 3 years. It doesn't even feel like it's been 3 years. It's just still like yesterday. Like I just go through the motions. And if I didn't have Zachary, I don't even know if I'd be sane right now. Because I have to be there for him. I have to be 100% for him. So I just tuck it away. And, you know, while he's at school, like right now he's at school, if I want to cry that day, then I do. If I want to pray about it, I do. When I get him after school, it's all about Zachary, and that's all I can do.
That brings us to the end of episode 228. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from California. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.